Support for The Full Story comes from Long Wharf Theater, creating theater of, for, and by the people of Greater New Haven. Everyone's story has a place at Long Wharf. You belong.
As we all know, life as we know it for the foreseeable future is over. And we have to adapt, and we have to adapt quickly. Welcome to The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Ron Robiak. Thanks for being part of the program today. Before we get to today's show, I just want to tell you about tomorrow's show, because some are already looking to the future. I know some are saying that's ridiculous. We have so many things to do right now, and I get that too. But at the meantime, elections are coming up, futures are being decided, and trust and ethical issues are going to be so important as we ponder an uncertain future. That's going to be tomorrow's program. I hope you tune in for that one. And if you have any thoughts or questions, please send them to us. Today, we're going to talk about education. How do students, teachers, parents, educators cope with such a quick changing landscape? And again, just like for trust and our future, what should we be preparing for? I have a lot of questions, but I know you do too. If you have them available, please email them to us now. We'll get them right over to our guests. Our email is tfs@wshu.org. If you're on Facebook, our page is Full Story WSHU. Professor Stephen Michaels is with us. He's Associate Provost at Sacred Heart University, and he's a professor of political science in the Department of Government. Hey, Professor, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Thanks for coming on. Dr. Latha Chandran is with us. Now, the doctor, also a professor, has been a medical education leader for, I think, more than a quarter of a century at Stony Brook. She is the founding director of the Miriam and David Donahoe Academy of Clinical and Educational Scholars Program at the Renaissance School of Medicine. And she's been so instrumental in advancing new educational programs and training within the school. Dr. Chandran, thank you. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Professor Michaels, one day, this is going to end. I know it's hard to see an end point, but I mean, one day it will end and students are going to return to the classroom. But what's going to happen over the next few months?
That's a good question. As you were saying at the beginning about thinking ahead, I mean, we're already thinking ahead about how things will be different in the fall, in terms of developing our programs and our courses. In the meantime, it's about finishing the semester strong. We've been using the word continuity a lot, but it's obviously continuity not in the sense that things aren't different, but, to try to maintain as much as possible a sense of normalcy and the integrity of the education that we're offering for our students. Obviously, the student support and student success is the most important part of what we're trying to focus on. We're just trying to think about how to finish the semester in a way that will permit students to continue their degrees, not just the semester, but the degrees without interruption, which is difficult in some instances, especially the health professions that have a very rigid curriculum.
Professor Michaels, I'm going to jump in for 1 second. The only reason is your phone has a bit of an echo on it, so I'm going to talk with the doctor for a moment, and JD is going to call you back, and we'll get you a better phone line, okay?
Okay,
thanks. Dr. Chandran, so how should students be coping nowadays? And what should parents or caregivers be doing? I mean, what are you looking at doing?
Well, we are in a unique position because we are actually training future physicians, and it's important for them to be part of this learning experience with the COVID. Having said that, what we have done is for our preclinical students, if you will, the early students, they have all gone online. We had to have a rapid escalation of our training for our faculty to be using technologies like Zoom or Microsoft Teams, where there's a lot of capabilities for small group work, joint work, thousands of students coming together using a whiteboard, etc. So that's what we have been doing for teaching in our preclinical years. For our clinical years, we are using, again, online resources right now. We just pulled them out of the hospitals for 2 weeks based on the recommendations from our national organizations. And we are using electronic cases. Aquifer is one example of that. There are many case files like that we're using. And we are using, again, Zoom sort of to provide ongoing communication and teaching with small groups.
Doctor, I mean, just for other courses, I know some professors are saying, wow, this is going to be difficult to do. I can't imagine those who want to become doctors are going to the healthcare professions where you need to see patients, hands-on experience, trying to learn online. Is it possible?
Yeah. Well, you can't learn everything in medicine online. You need to have the actual direct patient care experience. So we will not be doing that. But these are supplements, right? So for a week or two, while we are bridging this crisis, we can do things like that. But for clinical care, we actually do need some clinical experience. So there is telemedicine, for example. We have a course in telehealth, and our students are taking that course right now as we speak. And that's, again, a good way by which, you know, we have ramped up our ability to communicate with patients, take care of patients through telehealth, which is a reality in many parts of the country now. And medical schools have been using flipped classrooms for a number of years now, so it's not a big learning curve for our students because a lot of them do use Echo 360 and other modes, live video streaming and so on right now, even before the crisis, to be accessing their lecture materials and so on.
Professor Michaels, I know you're back with us. What are the logistical problems we're looking at? I mean, because for some students, internet access and laptops, it's not that big of a deal. But for many others, it could be a nightmare, right?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things we've been trying to impress upon our faculty is to not hold synchronous meetings, to move them, you know, the delivery of the content onto our learning management system or to create videos. You know, flipping a class, as was just mentioned, to give students more flexibility, not just only in how, but when they access the content, to remove some of those technological barriers. Mm-hmm. As we just saw with my phone, it's been a test of technology for this last week, trying to understand not just what our students have access to, but what are some of our systems, the capacity that they have. It's been really interesting to see what works really well and what doesn't work well.
Dr. Chandran, do you see this now as pretty much a norm for the way it is going forward, or do you think that within a few months from now, and hopefully that everything will get under control and the country will return to somewhat normal, or will this be part of the way it goes in the future?
I certainly think the country will return to normal. So I don't want people to panic about that. We have to deal with this crisis. But I do think this is an evolution in our the way we think about teaching and learning. And with more technology becoming available, even like the Zoom, I was really impressed at how quickly my faculty learned this technique. And I've gotten feedback from the students. This is actually better than live lectures, you know, because we get direct feedback right away. So I think technology is going to be a definite part of the future of education, medical or otherwise. But again, doctors cannot be trained just by online techniques. So there has to be a significant clinical component as well.
Professor Michaels, that brings up a really interesting point that the doctor was saying, because as someone who's a boomer, I mean, I look at technology in a certain way. I'm very comfortable with it. But for the younger generation, a lot of times if you say to them one-on-one access, you know, person to person, they just kind of look at you. I mean, it's important. But in the meantime, for them going online and learning this way, not that big of a deal.
Yeah, that's true for a lot of our students. It depends on the mode. Some are comfortable with video, some are not comfortable with video. I think the thing that I've been trying to wrestle with and get the faculty at Sacred Heart to understand is, you know, there's this common conception of our young people as digital natives, you know, because they were born into this technology and grew up with it, that they know how to do everything. And one of the things that we've realized is, you know, not only do faculty need a tutorial, but a lot of our students need a tutorial, too, that they know how to do a small number of things really well. So, you know, if Instagram or Facebook, especially Instagram, I suppose, comes up with an update, you know, they'll probably know, have it mastered by the end of the day. But in terms of, you know, some of the basic learning technologies, whether it's a learning management system or Zoom, we use WebEx at Sacred Heart, that the students won't be familiar with that.
Interesting. Dr. Chandran, for those who are listening who may be in the medical profession who would like some advice about what to do, since you have been doing this for a while, what should they concentrate on right away?
You know, I would just like to make one comment about the digital natives that was earlier brought up.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing, so medical schools around the country has this match day. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but this Friday is supposed to be the match day where the students find out where they matched into for the residency program. And because of the social distancing policies, we can't do the match day physically. So my students have proposed that we do a Zoom virtual match day. So that's what we're going to be doing, all sitting in our offices, everybody sitting in their homes, wherever they are. We're going to do a virtual match day at 12 noon on Friday. We don't know how that's going to go, but again, trying technology out. So to address your question about...
Sure. And the question about advice for those who may be listening, who are saying, look, I've never done this before, help me.
Yeah, well, you know, what I have done is I've pooled the resources we all have in our institution. Some people who are tech savvy and can help us, we should pool our resources and we should take on the challenge and learn and adapt as we go. But it's not impossible. Technology has advanced so much that this is going to be not that difficult.
Professor Latha Chandran is a medical education leader for, is it 26 years at Stony Brook?
Yes, 28 years.
28 years, sorry. I was shorting you a little bit there. Doctor, thank you. Stay healthy, be well, and I thank you for your time.
You too. Thank you so much for having me.
And Professor Stephen Michaels was with us, Associate Provost here at Sacred Heart University, and he's a professor of political science in the Department of Government, working with our friend Dr. Gary Rose, I believe, over there. Is that right?
That's right.
Professor, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Be well. If you want to comment on today's program, if you have questions for our guests who are coming up, we're talking about education, you can email those questions to us. We're at tfs@wshu.org. On Facebook, you're going to find us at Full Story WSHU. And sometimes you don't get to hear the whole program. We are available online at wshu.org, and you could also download it as a podcast on Google, on Apple, Stitcher, or Spotify. Let's take our first break. We'll be right back. It's the Full Story on WSHU. Once again, a reminder, our program is live between the 1 and 2 o'clock hour. Gets played back from 7 to 8. If you are listening between 7 and 8, some of the information that you will possibly be hearing on the program could be dated by then. That's the way it's going nowadays. So for the latest information, please go to our website, wshu.org. You're going to find everything, the latest news about Connecticut and New York, and links to our news coverage, and also to the state and federal agencies where you can get more information. Coming up in the next segment, in about 20 minutes from now, we're talking about education. We're going to be speaking with Don Williams, who is the executive director at the Connecticut Education Association. And also Robert Walsh. Robert is a middle school teacher in Fairfield County. And he's going to, and he just started, I believe, writing a daily account about virtual learning. And he's doing that for Hearst Connecticut Media. So Don Williams and Robert Walsh coming up in just a bit. Right now, let's continue the conversation with David Gamberg, who is superintendent of the Southport and Greenport schools on Eastern Long Island. Superintendent, welcome back, sir.
Ron, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me. One quick clarification. It would be Southold and Greenport, just for clarity's sake.
I'm sorry, sir. Say that again. You faded out.
No, I'm sorry. It's Southold. I think you indicated Southport. A minor.
I am so. I read that incorrectly. It's. I have it written down the right way, and my brain something different. Southold and Greenport. So, how are you?
Doing well, thank you. It's definitely very stressful times for all concerned.
You're doing tele-education now?
Pardon me?
Are you doing tele-education?
So we are in the midst of obviously looking to provide short-term and medium-term instruction. I wouldn't quite call it a blended model, but it's certainly we're very mindful of the equity issues involved. Whatever percentage of students, children in our districts that do not have good broadband, good access, good technology, we're very mindful of that. But yes, we are providing a whole range of platforms and sites and links for both teachers and students to carry forward during this very difficult time.
What do you do if a student doesn't have access to a good internet connection or even to a laptop?
So we look back to the old-fashioned paper packet way of delivering some measure of content that students can work on, their teachers can look to assess and try to ensure to the best of their ability that they are able to keep up, if you will, although that's certainly not, none of this, I might point out, is equivalent to the face-to-face human interaction that the teacher-student model you get from a brick-and-mortar school.
Do the kids know what paper and pencil is?
They still do, I think. I mean, that might be changing over time, but they still do, yes.
How are the teachers coping with this?
I have to say that they have been incredible. They have gone above and beyond, out of their way to research on their own, to look to acquire the necessary skills and adapt in lightning speed. We have to understand that 2 weeks ago, this wasn't even being contemplated. So it's of a magnitude that is incredible, but they are doing well. We as school districts, administrators, we're doing our level best to provide any and all support that we can for our teaching staff.
Talking with some teachers that I know, they're not behind the times, but they never planned to be tech savvy in terms of doing this. And frankly, some have told me off the air, I said they're very concerned because they're kind of lost and they know that they need to learn this quickly. What do they do? Is there some place you could recommend for them to go to read, a website, something where they can get up to speed? Or do you think that's already being disseminated?
Well, we face this issue of what you might call information overload. So there's plenty of sites. The question are, what are the good ones and how do you ferret out? And quite frankly, it's the same challenge for our students when they try to decipher factual news from news that may not be completely factual. So it's very hard to pinpoint one particular site. But, you have to look to those people, colleagues that are a little more first adopters, if you will, into this new world. And really your trusted friends and colleagues that you can look to who really have some advanced, research that they've done that you can trust and they can work people through it, those that are lagging behind in their facility to use some of this technology.
So work the teacher network, huh?
Absolutely. And there certainly are some good ones and good old-fashioned books that have been written, InfoSavvy. I'm trying to think of some off the top of my head. But, I definitely look to people that I trust. The library media specialists tend to be positions within schools where they have navigated quality research. If you happen to have a good staff member in that capacity, that's a great resource in every school. And sometimes there are just individual teachers that have, kind of taken a leap and have practiced video conferencing and, flipped classrooms and things like that. So there are definitely resources out there.
There are some people who are rushing the stores and they're buying 8,000 rolls of toilet paper to last them for the next 10 years, maybe. At the same time, I read an article, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal this morning. I was going through a whole bunch of different sites saying that many stores have already sold out of laptops.
Yeah, I just spoke with a teacher today, this morning, who was having difficulty getting cables that would just allow, the laptop to be connected, Ethernet cables. So it is true. I don't know how quickly they're going to ramp up production. And, you and I both know beyond the strange issue of toilet paper selling out, we're talking about medical supplies and all of those things that it's a wartime footing that we are facing rapidly. And it's a very real concern. You bring up a very legitimate practical point about laptops. In some districts, I'm very fortunate, than two districts that I'm the superintendent, we have deployed a goodly number of Chromebooks to our students that they have, teachers, staff members as well. But that's not true everywhere. It's understandable.
This just occurred to me because I have read and I've heard and I know of some already incredibly generous people in our region who are helping others, people doing the right things. And it's wonderful to see and it's wonderful to hear about. Are you looking for possibly donations for the students who don't have laptops, who don't have those, and some people have like old Chromebooks sitting around in the closet that they don't even use. Are you looking for donations?
You know, I think that's an excellent idea. Believe it or not, I am so focused right now on ensuring that students are fed and trying to look at expanding the model of delivery from our food service company for a grab-and-go breakfast and lunch program that just started today. The challenge with all of this is how long is this going to go on? And as each day, each hour, you know, it changes. The needs grow, and certainly looking for donations from very generous philanthropic people and organizations is on my list. I want to say one thing, if I may, which is not a question, but it's a comment. You know, I know that you had Regent Roger Tillis on your show fairly recently.
Mm-hmm.
And subsequent to that, he visited Southold Schools. And we brought him down because we were talking about what I think was the subject of your show, which is reimagining readiness, revisioning readiness for graduation of high school. And we brought him through the school to see learning by doing, students building robots, students doing a television production, students doing a musical. We with a preview for the play, the spring play, just got in before all this terrible news broke. And what my point is, those are things that you cannot replace with distance learning. It's critically important that we not lose sight of the fact that there are irreplaceable things. We have a tremendous school garden in both of our schools. You cannot replace touching, feeling the soil, smelling the herbs, obviously gathering the crops. These are things that you just simply cannot replace.
We had Mr. Tillis on the program a while back, and he's the Regents' representative on Long Island, and we were talking about changing the curriculum, possibly, at that time, and whether or not social studies would be part of the curriculum going forward. And, you know, I look back on that conversation now fondly, and I think, man, those were the good old days.
Look what we were talking about then.
I know I only have you for another 30 seconds. What would you like to leave the audience with? What should they know? What should they be thinking about?
Well, I want to stress three items when it comes to distance learning, and we've already talked about this, the equity, the importance of equity, the humanity component, the idea that the human condition, that the idea of being face-to-face with a human being is critically important, irreplaceable, and the quality. The quality of how we do this is not about the bells and whistles and the buttons. It's really about the skill of the teacher being able to think about what they're doing with the technology, and the student having the ability to not just consume but to produce. These are all very critical issues as we enter this new paradigm.
David Gamberg is the superintendent of the Southold and Greenport schools on Eastern Long Island. Superintendent, you're always so kind with your time. I know it's such a stressful time. I thank you, and I wish nothing but good health for you, sir.
And to you and your family as well. Thank you so much, Ron. Be well.
Thank you. You too. Don Paris is going to join us now for a few minutes. Don was with us in the studio a few months back. He's a Connecticut-based education consultant. We had a great conversation back then, and we wanted to bring Don back in for this one. Don, how are you?
Hey, hello. How are you? Hope you're doing well.
You know what? We're like everybody else, I think, trying to figure out the new paradigm, the new way of living. It certainly is difficult for teachers. And I want to start the conversation with you, Don, with this. I was reading some comments online this morning from some people who live in the Fairfield County area. And some of these were from parents. Mm-hmm. And parents who have had their kids at home now just for a few days. And one mom wrote, she goes, I've been doing this just for a short time, and all I could say is that teachers are magnificent if this is what they do every day. And she goes, teachers are my heroes.
Amen. I would say the same. Let me suggest, I want to follow immediately from Superintendent Gamberg. I thought we ought to take a look at the social, personal aspect of what's happening now with our students and families, obviously, because this is really uncharted territory. And of all the years I've been in the business and working in dozens and dozens of schools, the emotional bond between adult and student is so crucial to the welfare of our society beyond that individual moment. And I do think that's where online learning can't replicate the same.
This, I don't know how to phrase this question, but yesterday we had former Congressman Steve Israel on the program, and he talked about how when he was in Congress, they had done hearings and drills for a possible pandemic. And he was upset because he said, look, that was taken out of the federal funding now in the Trump administration, and those people should have been in the room. And he said, but we had planned for this a long time ago. Let me ask you, is this something that those in the educational field ever considered something like this would happen?
Well, I can't imagine it quite to this extreme. I've always assumed that we had contingencies, especially regarding distant learning, if that's required. I can't honestly respond other than saying this is a monumental task, and I do think the relationships that have fostered in school are so crucial to this topic. I'm not sure that can be thoroughly prepared for, if you understand my point.
Sure.
A lot of the teachers I'm working with, from all levels, by the way, K through 12th grade, this is a novel experience, to put it kindly, and I think they're going to really have to make accommodations, especially knowing that certain students will not have access at the same degree or sophistication as others, and they're going to lose some really significant skills if this carries on any length of time.
And Superintendent Gamberg, who was on just before you, said, you know, it may come down for some students to do it the old-fashioned way. I mean, we're talking paper and pencil and pen, right?
Right. I would suggest what you will see rather quickly is some districts will create what I would call learning packets, which are basically paper that's going to be distributed to the students just as if they were sitting in class. But again, I don't know if even that's going to have long-term effect, because we're losing the effect of using all this technology now that schools are almost literally committed to. And some kids are better visual learners. How do you replicate that, you know, doing paper and pencil kind of work?
All right, so I've got 3 minutes left with you. Yeah. Give us some advice, especially for the parents who are listening. What should parents be doing over the next few months?
Well, one thing I wrote down even to suggest, the family has to have a structured time for instructional activity, 30, 60 minutes, depending on age, obviously, so that there's no distractions, turn off all the electronics, the cell phones, and et cetera. Because this is really a serious issue, and again, we can't allow all this time to pass. I think the other point is make sure that the parents are engaged. This is not something that should just be happening separately with the child. Even if it's a teenager, they do need feedback and kind of like a personalization to what they're doing. It is going to be a major conflict, though, I would admit, in a number of homes, particularly if the family is not very stable or the family doesn't have a real historical sense of the importance of learning, which tragically is a bit more common than I think many of our listeners understand.
And I want to apologize. I didn't realize that you were actually going to stay with us through the break, which it's great, man, because I have so many more questions for you.
But
Professor, the other thing that occurred to me when I was driving in thinking about the students is that so many of them, I mean, granted, they go to school to learn, but as you mentioned, it is also a place where they get their food. They learn social interaction, and for many of them, they get their medical care, right? They see the school nurse or the school doctor.
Clearly, especially if you think of a preteen or maybe early adolescence, their social interests are so incredibly peaked at that time. So they want to be around their peers. They want to be in a group environment, because they're learning all those crucial skills like cooperation, sharing, working with others, tolerating others, a major concern. How do you replace that by staying in your home, especially if, again, if it has any time duration? And I do think if I'm a middle or high school person, this is a challenge that these kids are really going to have to negotiate somehow.
I was speaking with the mom over the weekend, and I was speaking with a mom and another dad, and she was picking up her kid at school when I was there, too. And I said, how are things going? And she said, I now have three teenagers at home. My husband is going to be working at home. She goes, I'm already out of my mind.
Right.
And she goes, I am building a she shed, or I'm taking over the garage.
Yeah, some people are going to have to renegotiate their relationship. There's no question about that. I would say this will be a true measure of the communication between parent and child more than anything else. Because, again, you're going to have a lot of physical intimacy in a small setting, especially if the weather is inappropriate. And after a while, there's only so much time you can spend with children without kind of losing your perspective. So, yeah, no, I do think that's going to be an ultimate determiner how long this really continues, to be honest.
Professor Donald Paris is with us. He is a Connecticut-based education consultant. Professor, hold on one second. We're going to take our break. When we come back, Don Williams is going to be joining us. He's the executive director at the Connecticut Education Association. And Robert Walsh, who's a middle school teacher in Fairfield County, he is now teaching at home. That's coming up right after the break. Please stay with us. It's The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Ron Ropiak. Once again, all the information that you need to know about the coronavirus in New York and Connecticut, it's available on our website, WSHU.org. You're going to find links there to all our news coverage and to state and federal agencies, so you can get all the details right there. For the next 18 minutes or so, we're talking about education, tele-education, and life in, well, from now to who knows when. Dr. Donald Paris is with us, Connecticut-based education consultant. And we're also bringing in another Don Williams. He's the executive director at the Connecticut Education Association. And he knows the Connecticut legislature well because he used to be the president at the state Senate. Don Williams, welcome, sir.
Thank you, Ron. Good to be with you.
Same here. What are you hearing from teachers nowadays? How are they holding up?
Well, you know, it's a time for improvisation, and teachers are good at that because in different ways they have to improvise and adapt to situations every single day in the classroom. But now we're talking about something fundamentally different and something that could last for weeks or longer. And putting together effective and quality distance learning, supplemental learning, whatever you'd like to call it, is going to be a challenge with a lot of different issues, but it's something that teachers are rolling up their sleeves and they want to be a part of.
What do they think the number one challenge is?
Well, you know, equity is a very large concern. When you're talking about working at home, it works best for students who are motivated, who are very self-regulated. It can be enhanced depending on parental assistance and help. But we know there are many parents who, even in this situation where many are working at home, others cannot work at home. We know that some have internet service and others do not. Some have either laptops or Chromebooks or iPads, and others do not. So addressing those issues is important. Otherwise, you find that students who are already behind or who have special needs or just additional learning needs have the potential to fall further behind. So it's not something that is going to be an obstacle where we say, well, we can't do it, but these are very significant concerns in terms of trying to adapt to this new reality and do the best we can to meet the needs of all students.
Don Paris, I brought this up with Superintendent Gamberg a little bit earlier because I know many people over the years have old laptops, old PCs, things like that, just sitting around and collecting dust, if you will. And I thought this would be an excellent opportunity to be altruistic, because there's so many kids who could use this maybe older technology, but I mean, it still works. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I certainly do. And I would like to respond to Don's comment. What are we going to do with the vast array of kids with special needs? Because you're going to have a significant issue how to create lessons and activities, even if they're via the internet, because many times they're not specialized or modified for children who have those type of concerns. So think of a child with learning disabilities, maybe an ELL population now, which is growing rapidly in the state. And I do think what Mr. Williams said is going to be significant to where we head in the next few weeks.
Don, do you think this will ever go back to normal in terms of kids going back to the schools? I don't mean to make that sound horrible, but you know, I've even heard some people say, look, this could actually last till the end of the year, the calendar year, not the school year. I mean, the end of 2020.
Great question, Ron. And we have to assume that this is going to be way more than like a two-week outage. And we have to prepare for that. Some are saying this could last 4, 6, 8 weeks, and others are saying that, yes, this could last till the end of the school year. You know, if you want to get into worst-case scenario, you can also take into consideration that some of the healthcare experts are saying that this may not stop through the summer, and even if it slows, that it has the potential to come back in the fall and the winter going into 2021. So, you know, that should not send us into a panic, but it should sober us to the reality that we need to do all we can to put together the right combination or the best combination under the circumstances of quality supplemental materials, knowing that for many of our students, when this is over, and yes, it will be over at some point in the hopefully the not too distant future and things get back to normal, that there will also be a need to catch some of those students up, to remediate once they're back in the classroom. In the meantime, yes, we have to kind of scramble and put together the best quality under the circumstances of supplemental materials so that it's not just completely downtime and lost time for students.
Don Paris, where does Connecticut stand in terms of teleeducation, in terms of the infrastructure? I do know of communities around the United States, and I worked with some many years ago, that planned for this, believe it or not, 20 years ago. They saw an influx of students coming into their systems, and they said, we don't have the classrooms to accommodate this. We are going to wire the towns so that way the students, many of them in high school or college, could actually be away from the schools and still take part in this. Is this going to change our paradigm? Is it going to change how Connecticut functions in the future, and that we have to become more wired, if you will?
That's a good phrase. I think you're correct. That certainly looks to be like our future. But again, we're going to have to think of it as a connection between the human element of teaching children and the electronic version that we're discussing. Think of us as having one of the highest income in the country. We also have a huge disparity between communities. So our state is a rather complex environment when you consider the Greenwiches, the Derbys, the Waterburys. It's a very diverse kind of landscape, and I think all these districts are going to have to make significant adjustments, even allowing for that some are already, quote, ahead of the curve. And I do think it's going to come down to the quality of the faculty, obviously. The more skilled your individual staff really is, that's going to make the ultimate comparison from point A to point B.
Don Williams, Don Paris brings up, I think, an excellent point. I mean, a number of months back, Governor Lamont talked just a tiny bit, it wasn't even all that much, about regionalism and having some school districts work together. And I mean, that went nowhere. And there were protests at the state capitol, there were hearings around the state, and basically he backed off. But from what Don Paris was just saying, I'm just wondering out loud now if this is going to say, look, 169 towns and cities in Connecticut can't do their own dance. Everyone's going to have to show up and at times link arms and do the same dance.
Well, that's certainly true. And, you know, we do have statewide initiatives, curriculums, protocols, et cetera. And we also at the same time have a tradition of neighborhood schools overseen by municipalities. I think in order to get through what we're facing right now, everybody has to pitch in and do the best that they can under the circumstances to provide some engaging materials for students that will be academically appropriate, that of course will not be a 100% substitution of what they get in person in the classroom. But we are dealing with a completely unexpected reality right now that may require that people stay at home for weeks and possibly months. And so we have to adapt to that and do the best we can to provide students who will be home with downtime, with activities that can prepare them to come back to school when this is over and catch up. And then I think you're right in terms of greater working together in the future so that all communities are ready. Hopefully this doesn't happen again, but are ready to provide, whether it's a snowstorm or a hurricane or whatever, to make up for this kind of loss.
You know, a few weeks back, we did a program about the proposed religious exemption for the MMR vaccine in Connecticut and everything that was going on up at the state capitol about it. And someone wrote me an email and basically said, for those who are not going to do this, you're talking about homeschooling. And the gist of the email was, man, I don't know how the heck people do it in terms of homeschooling their kids. And I was thinking about that email as I was driving in because I was like, well, guess what? It's now for all the students, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Robert Walsh is going to join us now. Robert is a middle school teacher in Fairfield County. He's writing a daily account about virtual learning. And he's doing it for, I believe it's Robert for the Hearst Connecticut Media, or is it just for the Connecticut Post?
Yes.
Okay. How are you? Thanks for coming on.
I'm doing great under the circumstances. I think my eyes are crossing a bit. We've never had this much screen time.
just so you know, you're on with Don Williams. Don is the executive director at the Connecticut Education Association, and our other Don, who is Professor Don Paris, he's an education consultant based here in Connecticut. Just to bring you up to date, Robert. So, Robert, you're a middle school teacher. How long have you been teaching?
This is my 21st year.
Have you ever contemplated doing something like this?
You mean distance learning?
Yes.
We've been doing flipped classroom curriculum for years, where there are certain things we will provide them the instruction that they will watch, or you know, they'll kind of engage in the content at home, and then it allows us more time to discuss in the classroom the next day. So it kind of, you know, we have a lot of stuff already kind of in the hopper for that. But I think my principal summed it up perfectly in an email he sent home to parents last night, which was basically, we're trying to build a plane while flying it. And we're figuring out things as we go along and limitations. And basically my colleagues and I are just, you know, since last Wednesday, at least in my district, we were kind of given the heads up that this might be happening, and then boom, we closed on Thursday. We didn't even have a chance to talk to our kids first because circumstances warranted it. You know, it's understandable, and so we've kind of had to figure things out on the fly, and that means a long day from morning till night, kind of trying to find. I've been in webinars and doing online research, trying to find more interesting ways to deliver my content. And to try and, you know, you can't replicate what you do in the classroom. I think I heard one of the Dons talking about that when I first came on. Mm. But you try and do the best you can for right now. The problem is it's a moving target. Initially, we were preparing for a week so we could get a deep clean of the building. Then it became, well, the governor's closing until the 31st, you know, and now, you know, if you're reading from certain government officials online, they're talking about even longer, possibly going through the summer in some places. And so it's hard to hit that moving target and figure out how to plan. Are you planning short term or long? It really makes a difference in how you deliver the content.
So I did ask Don Williams and Don Paris both about advice for parents, because some parents are quite anxious about this nowadays. I mean, besides dealing with the virus and the fears of that, their job also possibly working from home, dealing with the kids. Give us some advice for the parents. When you talk to the parents of the students, what are you telling them?
Basically, the most important thing is to let the kids know everything's fine. They're going to be fine no matter what you get to or don't get to right now. We'll take care of it when you come back. There's nothing you can't get right. I think the anxiety that I'm seeing from emails from students and parents is pretty quickly allayed. I kind of put that at the feet of the teacher. And as I tell my kids every day in school, and I tell my parents all the time, hey, put the pressure on us. Put the pressure on your teachers. Reach out. Talk to us. You know, it's easy to forget that teaching is a calling as much as it is a profession. And we are always looking to reach out and help. And you will find there's not a target demographic that will go above and beyond more often than teachers. And I think the most important thing for parents who are nervous is to reach out to the teachers and say, what can I do? Because we don't expect parents to be able to deliver the content in the same way, and certainly not with the same efficacy that we took years in the classroom and with years of training to do. So put the pressure on your teachers, put the pressure on us, and talk to us and have your kids talk to us. Because, you know, for me, and I know for most of my colleagues, it's killing us being out of the classroom, because we get into teaching to work with kids. And not just to create content to be pushed through a screen. So it's completely understandable that people thrown into this position suddenly having to oversee the education of their children is stressful.
Mm. Robert, I need to hold you there because I'm just about out of time. I want to give Don Williams and Don Paris just 45 seconds each for the final thoughts from them. Don Williams, can I start with you, please, sir?
Sure. You know, I can't second what Robert said enough. He really said it all in terms of not having our students and our children panic, letting them know that things will be all right, that their education will resume back in the classroom, and that we will make all of this right in terms of academics and their needs going forward. And that it is true, teachers absolutely want to get back into that classroom, and they have that sense of purpose and desire to help guide these school children. So we are going to be rolling up our sleeves and working towards solutions, doing the best we can with the remote learning, the supplemental learning, and preparing for the children coming back to school and catching them up as need be, whenever that happens to be.
Don Paris, 30 seconds, please.
Yeah, I'll just say the most critical aspect to this for me is getting teachers prepared for the inevitable, which I hope comes quickly, so that when students do return, they're going to focus on the interpersonal energy and dynamic between both sides, because I do think this is a needier generation of children, and teachers play an enormous role in developing those relationships for their future.
Professor Don Paris, he's a Connecticut-based education consultant. Don Williams is the executive director at the Connecticut Education Association. And Robert Walsh is a middle school teacher in Fairfield County. And if you want to read his daily account about virtual learning, you can do it at Hearst Connecticut Media, the Connecticut Post. Robert, Don Williams, Don Paris, thank you, sirs. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Stay safe. Be well. It's going to do it for our show today. Joelle Sear thought she had escaped us the other week. We brought her back. She's our engineer. Thank you, Joelle, for coming in and doing such a wonderful job. Carrie Frank is our digital editor. Our associate producers are Fatou Sangari, Sabrina Garone, Roberto Rojas, Desiree DiOrio. J.D. Allen is our producer, and Terry Sheridan is the news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.